I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
You're listening to Text Message, the UK-focused technology podcast with me, Nate Langson.
And me, Ian Morris.
And thank you to our patrons, including Sandy Shomer, Tom Mannion, Neil Jones, Jeff Skipper, Brian Creevy, Al Struthers, Gavin Driver, Raphael Munoz, and many, many others who are supporting us directly. You can join them and get access to our weekly sister show, Extra Message, and we had a very good one this week, and our full-length and ad-free version of the main podcast by going to patreon.com/UKTech. Ian, it's a great pleasure for you to be joined by me this week, and I would say the same is also true the other way around.
Yes, that is entirely accurate.
Good. Well, let's jump straight into the news then, because we're recording on a Sunday and we're both a bit tired. And I wanted to open the show by talking about Bose, which is planning to close its entire retail store footprint in the UK, as well as more widely across North America, Europe, Japan and Australia. The Verge wrote this week that the company pointed to the fact that its headphones and speakers and other products are, quote, increasingly purchased through e-commerce as the reasoning for the store closures, and hundreds of employees will be laid off as a result of this. Now, Bose actually opened its first retail store in the early 90s, 1993, in fact, I think, and The Verge had a good quote from Colette Burke, who's the company's vice president of global sales. And Burke said, "Originally, our retail stores gave people a way to experience, test, and talk to us about multi-component CD and DVD-based home entertainment systems. At the time, it was a radical idea, but we focused on what our customers needed and where they needed it, and we're doing the same things now." Now, some stores will be remaining open in Asia and the Middle East, but I looked up a few of the stores that Bose has in the UK, some of its larger ones at least, and first on that list is the flagship store down here on Regent Street in London. It's open today, but its days now are, I would say, numbered. There's also another big one in my old teenage stomping ground of Meadowhall in Sheffield. Now, Ian, this story I know interests you as much as it interests me. And before I jump in with my take on this, why is this currently so relevant to your interests?
Because my headphones are broken, Nate, and I need to replace them. And I don't. So obviously, you and I have had a conversation about headphones. In fact, we've had many conversations about headphones. But the thing that I struggle with is trusting the ability of my fingers to purchase something that's going to be largely used by my ears. And I think that having a store and having a place where you can go to try on headphones is actually a really valuable component of buying headphones. Because whilst you and I have talked about your particular choice of headphones, which I'm sure we'll come to, I know that we have kind of different headphone tastes. For example, I listen to Extra Message recorded entirely on the AirPod Pros. And I remember feeling kind of a little bit in a disagreement with you about the original AirPods, because I don't think they're quite the horror show that you describe them to be. But I'm not saying they're perfect by any stretch of the imagination. But for me, there are some good bits. Perhaps they're not perfect. But I've recently rediscovered my old Bowers & Wilkins. What are they? The P7s,
probably.
Yeah, and I've become quite attached to them, but unfortunately they are now a bit broken, and I need to replace them. And in fact I don't believe I've told you this aspect of this story. I emailed Bowers and asked them about getting them fixed, and they said yes, we can do that. It'll be £99 to have them fixed, unless we can't fix them, in which case we'll give you a replacement pair, but it'll be £160. And I was like, okay, that's expensive for an older pair of headphones. But they also offered to give me, instead of that, they said, oh, you can just exchange them. We've got a limited number of the PX headphones that we can just do a straight swap for, and that would be £160 as well. And I felt, well, those headphones are a lot better than the ones I've got. They have active noise cancelling, for example. So I was kind of tempted by that. But at the same time, I was thinking, I have never heard these headphones. And that's why I haven't quite pulled the trigger on it yet, because I I really, really want to hear headphones.
And I think what's worth noting as well here is that these store closures are going to be Bose stores, and Bose still retails in other high street places. For example, it sells in John Lewis, I believe. It sells in the Apple stores. So there will be a limited ability for people to still go and try these headphones out in person, but not under the guise of a Bose store itself, with all the comparisons and product knowledge that you would expect from an employee of the manufacturer. But you're right, and in fact, you and I are completely on the same page about the need to try headphones in person, because last December, 2018 December that was, I went into John Lewis in Westfield in London here to try out three or four pairs of headphones that I'd been researching online, and I went to the John Lewis counter and I got to listen to some of the headphones, and I listened to a pair of Sonys that I'd looked up, and I wasn't too impressed. I listened to what was at the time the most current high-end Beats model, largely only because I knew it had the wireless chip that Apple makes very convenient if you're using multiple Apple products. But again, I wasn't super impressed with the sound given the cost of them. And then I tried out some Bang & Olufsen's, the H9i's, and they're ultimately the ones that I bought. But I did feel very guilty because I didn't buy them... I did buy them in person. I was about to say I didn't buy them then. I went and bought them online, but I didn't. I completely scuppered my own story. I did exactly what I should have done, which is I tried them out in the store, and then I bought them in the shop. So actually, I've just done in my own argument, which was people just buy them online. But that's not true, because I didn't.
But I also think that headphones are one of those things that they're not... There's not necessarily always a massive saving to be had buying them online, and I think that given the time frame when you bought those headphones, they would have been quite new, wouldn't they? So I don't imagine you would have saved a huge amount of money by buying them online.
I don't remember. I mean, they were very expensive, but they were the kind of expensive where you think, well, what's the point in saving 30 quid and waiting 3 days for delivery before Christmas? I knew I'm going to look after these. I'm going to have them for years. They're an investment, really.
Well, and also don't forget that if you did buy them in John Lewis, you would have been able to take advantage of that slightly longer warranty period as well, which is a very good selling point for John Lewis. And I'm kind of sad about the idea of Bose shutting retail, because I feel that at the moment that's kind of a silly decision, because people are increasingly aware of the fact that they need to spend a bit more money on headphones. I think that, and you may disagree with this, but I see a lot more premium headphones on heads these days than I did 10 years ago. And I can only imagine that's because people are thinking, if I spend £300 on a really nice pair of over-ear headphones, I'm actually going to get something that's completely different to what I would get if I spent, you know, 40 quid on a pair of Sonys from Amazon.
I agree entirely. I mean, you are right that you do see many more pairs of premium headphones, but I'm also slightly worried that the insane popularity of the AirPods are sucking up some of the goodwill that people have when it comes to dropping more money than they normally would have done on headphones 10 years ago.
Fair. But I do also think that, and you mentioned this in Extra Message, and I completely agree, there is more to AirPods than the sound quality. Now, if I was personally spending my own money, I've got to admit, I don't think AirPods would be my choice, because I feel like that's not... I think that money would be better spent on a pair of really good Bluetooth headphones. However, I also really, really loved my time with the original AirPods, because it's just a convenience thing. And if perhaps... out on the road, you know, maybe 90% of the listening I do is to podcasts. And for that, the AirPods are absolutely brilliant. It's only when I am in the mood for a little bit of music, which I have to admit isn't all the time when I'm commuting, for example. That's when I would feel like I'd want a decent pair of headphones.
We've only talked about headphones so far with Bose. But of course, just in the Regent Street store alone, you're looking at a lot more than headphones in there. There's headphones. They have the Bluetooth speakers. They have hi-fi. They have separates. Lots and lots of things that, again, do make sense to try out and experience in a store-like environment. in a way that many retail stores that do also have those products in store, in stock, won't be able to demonstrate necessarily in the same way.
Yes.
So I think something will be missing out a little bit by these stores being closed.
But again, I mean, I don't know what the state of specialist hi-fi stores is these days, but there will always be an outlet for those kind of things. And I from a buying perspective, I would obviously rather go to somewhere like, maybe not for separates or something like that, but for a shop like John Lewis, at least offers you the opportunity to try a different range of manufacturers. So I guess I'm kind of doing what you did and spoiling my own argument in that I'm sad that Bose is shutting its doors, but actually probably the future for trying headphones and speakers and components is probably a store where you can try more than one manufacturer's product and hear them side by side.
The other aspect to this story that I think is quite relevant is that over the last couple of years, we've also seen a massive rise in the number of flagship or branded electronics stores from manufacturers like Microsoft and Samsung. And we've talked about this. Microsoft, in fact, opened its first flagship European store last year on Regent Street. It's probably a 3-minute walk up Regent Street. If you're down at Piccadilly Circus, for example, you walk up, you get to the Bose store first, then you get to the Apple store, then you get to the now Microsoft store. And the Apple and Microsoft stores both sell these kinds of products because obviously they can be used with that company's range of electronics. Samsung as well has got these display centers that we've talked about before where you can't even buy anything from them. They're purely there as a means of demonstrating what you can do with their ecosystem, if you like. But again, there's a reason to go in there, and it's all about try before you buy, experience it, and then go and buy it online. So it's interesting that those two trends have kind of taken place over the same period of time. The likes of Bose closing, but the likes of Microsoft being able to open up entirely new spaces. It's not a retail is dead story. It's more that maybe specialist retail, high street retail, is dead, and instead, what's surviving is the massive, broadest ecosystem based stores within which you can buy the specialist products as an extension. That sounds a little bit wanky, but you know what I mean.
No, but I also think that what you've just sort of made a hint at it is that the Microsoft store is essentially a vanity project, isn't it, really? It's more about, hey, look at us, we're like Apple, we've got a store. Although you can't buy anything there, and therefore it isn't a store. It's
the Microsoft one.
Yeah.
No, the Microsoft one, you can buy things there, definitely.
But do they have a stock of everything?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I completely misunderstand. I mean, I haven't been into it. I should go.
I actually went to the launch. In fact, I actually went in before it launched and did an extra message from there quite a few months ago. But it's an amazing facility, and I would argue it's broader in scope than the Apple store is in terms of products. Like, it's got the Xbox gaming room has basically like a setup for streamers to use, for education, for, it's got like a mini little LAN party setup where you can play multiple people at once all in the same room. It's a very interesting experience, but ultimately you can buy stuff and walk out of the store.
Okay, that's good then. I mean, I was going to say there's very little point in that kind of thing if it's not. But yeah, I suppose Samsung's tried all sorts of retail things. I suppose it feels weird to me that these companies were with products that I don't feel the same need to try. I mean, if you buy an Xbox, you know it's going to do what you need it to do. Buying decision for computers and things like that is probably going to be more based on specs than it is on actually trying it first. But hey-ho, the world is changing.
But do you remember back at CNET when you and I were reviewing products? A big part of what we did was to try and explain the aspects of using a product that can't be garnered from the side of a box or a spec sheet.
Yes.
You know, things like the travel on a keyboard. Did the keys feel soft? Did it feel comfortable to type on? What were the viewing angles of the screen like? It was things like that we always put a bit of extra time into. into writing about?
Because I think you and I have always felt that reviews can very much be, and this is very, very true of audio, they can lapse into a kind of impenetrable wall of nonsense, if you will, because, you know, there's a lot of
go on,
talk
give us
about,
an example. I don't know what you mean.
Well, I mean, and this is true of, I think, true of cars and true of audio products and stuff like that. The terminology used by reviewers is kind of something that's feels like it was fixed 20 years ago. And to give a really good example, actually, with cars, if you think about an electric car, which has a very different performance sort of thing to a petrol car, in that it generates all of its torque immediately, you've basically the old terminology that ceases to work. And so people will talk about how torquey a car is. First of all, no one understands what that means. And second of all, the market has changed so much, and the innovation has meant that is no longer a relevant metric. But you'll still hear it trolleyed out. And I think that what we tried to do, and I mean, I think this was sort of a gift that the people who ran CNET in the UK gave us, was that, you know, we always tried to put things in terms that people would actually understand. So these headphones sound good because, or these headphones are good, but they're probably not as good as this pair, blah, blah, blah. And that's fine. But then I find myself now in a position where I'm not prepared to trust reviews, because I've read reviews and they're all largely positive about things. And I'm like, but this doesn't help me understand the difference between two products.
If you are going to miss the Bose store, let us know. You can send in your eulogies, your happy memories of trundling round the Regent Street flagship, listening to headphones, and then going on Amazon and buying them for 20% less. Or maybe you were walking around Meadow Hall. You'd just been into the local Tandy, maybe shopped in the window of the Argos down there in 1997, before popping into the movie corner of the shopping centre to watch Men in Black or Jurassic Park, and then buying some headphones in person. I'm sure you've been there. I am speaking from personal experience. Hello at uktechshow.com. Nottingham's electric taxis are getting an easier way to charge with the introduction of wireless refuelling. Engadget wrote this week that our government is investing £3.4 million into the technology as part of a six-month trial, which will see 10 Nissan and LEVC electric taxis fitted with wireless charging technology and offered to drivers rent-free. A similar pilot was launched in Oslo last year. In a separate write-up, the BBC said that Nottingham will be fitting 5 charging plates on the ground outside the city's main railway station, expected later this year. And a large part of the appeal of this idea is that cars just need to drive on top of a charging plate rather than use a cable, which can be unsightly and perhaps even a tripping hazard, given the length of time that some of these vehicles need to be plugged in. Now, I had personal experience of the dangers of electrically charging a vehicle in the street, but I saw a guy just the day before yesterday walking through, where would I have been? I forget exactly where I was now. Maybe I was somewhere near Farmers Green. I was going to Andy's. I can't remember, sorry, but it was somewhere in central London. And there was a guy who's obviously never seen an electric charging station before and was walking around the car, sort of looking at it. I genuinely don't believe it was his vehicle. And then I saw him almost trip up on a cable, which I thought, well, that's quite dangerous, given that he's standing next to a fairly busy road. And so that's half the reason I wanted to include this story, because I thought, well, I get that. You know, it's not like when you're refueling with petrol, and you're only holding the cable in for a matter of seconds, and you generally don't have people walking past you. But in this instance, with the charging in the road, it was just a giant blue cable next to a busy road. And I thought, I'm not sure how good an idea that actually is in that situation.
Yeah.
So what are your thoughts?
I kind of agree. And actually, it pains me somewhat to be positive about the government. But when it comes to things like autonomous cars and electric vehicles and this kind of innovation, it does feel like they're putting more effort than you'd expect them to into this kind of stuff. And I think that is a a broadly speaking good thing. I mean, I can't wait for electric cars to be the dominant automotive force, if you will, because I genuinely think they're great. And I think that the more money we put into it now, the better our infrastructure will be. And it's something that I feel that, you know, we could be leaders in if we put the money and effort into it. And I think, given the unfortunate way that the UK government has ignored tech and not encouraged it perhaps enough, I think this is a good opportunity to innovate and make things better for the future.
I'll be very interested to see when these trials become a little more widespread, whether we hear any complaints from taxi drivers that the time that they spend charging a vehicle equates to too many lost trips that they would otherwise have been able to take after being able to fill up in a few seconds at a traditional fueling station. Because if the cost is being offset, like, for example, if the government said, well, you can recharge your electric taxis for free, we'll subsidize it. If that compensates for the potential lost trips that they would have made, then I could see that being less of a problem. But if I was, for every 10 minutes that you're not spending picking up a passenger and dropping them off because you're charging, I mean, that's just directly lost money from your pocket.
Yeah, and that's a pretty valid point. Although I would say there is a sort of hidden advantage to this, in that forcing people who drive professionally to take a break, even if that's to top up an electric car, is probably not a bad idea. Having people able to just sort of drive all day and be on the road is probably not the greatest from a safety perspective.
Well, definitely not. I mean, it was actually one of Uber's changes that it made after it first losing its license in London, is that it imposed a mandatory rest period after, I think it may have been 8 or 10 hours, like it just shuts you off for that exact reason.
Oh, I think that's a really solid idea, and I'm actually amazed that it hasn't been more of a thing. And I honestly don't know what the rules are about black cabs and whether there are any mandated rest periods. But as far as I know, there aren't. And we don't ask long haul lorry drivers to do that without a rest period. And rightly so. It seems like a really good thing. And I imagine that the long-term goal of electric charging will be to do perhaps have charging points in the road that maybe charge your car as you drive along. So perhaps this will be something that isn't actually a long-term shift in thinking about safety, but something that is a sort of stepping stone to more electric charging and that being a thing where you have roads that charge your car. It's something that might happen. It's quite a clever idea, really.
A big one here, but a little outside of our normal consumer focus, but I didn't want to miss this. TV cameras are to be allowed to film in Crown Courts in England and Wales for the first time. The BBC wrote that new legislation is being laid before Parliament that'll allow judges' sentencing remarks in serious, high-profile criminal cases to be seen and heard by TV and online audiences. The trials themselves will not be televised, contrary to how they are in some countries, such as the US, because in the UK, only the judge will be filmed. And the judiciary, broadcasters and government here have all welcomed the move, according to the BBC. The legislation is going to mean that the TV cameras can film the judges passing sentence in cases like murder, sexual offences, terrorism, and other serious high-profile cases in Crown Courts. And that will include the Old Bailey, which, you know, houses some of the most heinous crimes and the subsequent sentencing for them, and has been handing out porridge, I think, since the 1600s. I think it must be knocking on 500 years old, the Old Bailey. Now, the BBC also wrote that filming in the Scottish courts has been allowed, subject to permissions and conditions, since about 1990 or 1992, but it doesn't happen very often, and the first time it filmed a sentencing was in 2012, so about 8 years ago. And I was doing a little bit of reading around for this because I actually thought that the majority of court cases in the US could be filmed, but I was wrong. The trial of O.J. Simpson was a very notable one, I think, in the 90s, because it was televised, but it faced a lot of criticism because it was a bit of an unedifying spectacle at times, and obviously a lot of the footage from those trials has been used and reused and certainly abused probably in the decades since. And some critics have also said that allowing cameras might prevent witness wanting to come forward or present evidence knowing they may end up being filmed. And so that's why in the UK, at least, the filming will only be for the judge because it'll still allow for footage for news programs to be captured. And finally, I also read up a little bit about some of the rules with courtroom sketch artists, because certainly we see a huge amount of that. And ordinarily, when you hear of a sentence being carried out on the news and they need to have a bit of B-roll or footage to go along with the voiceover, it so often just uses the courtroom sketches. Now, these have been around for a very, very, very long time. Certainly in the UK, they've been used for goodness knows how long, hundreds of years, I believe. And they go back to about the 1800s in the US. They're less common these days in the US because cameras are much more, there's a lot more leniency allowed with cameras being used, except in federal courts. I don't think they can be in federal courts. Whereas in Britain, because we don't ban any cameras, the sketch artists are still wildly employed, with a bonus caveat that I didn't know until I was researching this morning, that artists have to make notes in the courtrooms but do the actual sketching from memory after the fact.
Yes.
So this will make a big difference, at least for the sketch artists who would be spending their time detailing what a judge looked like during sentencing, because they can skip over that knowing the cameras are going to focus on that, and they can spend a bit more time making accurate notes about what the defendants and the prosecutors looked like, maybe.
Yeah, and I mean, it is one of the weirdest things about UK courts. I mean, I completely understand why it's necessary, but the rule that they are not allowed to draw while they're in the courtroom has always struck me as being slightly strange. I kind of feel like it is a valuable service, and as you said, it won't be replaced by this, because my first thought was, those court sketch artists are going to be all out of work, aren't they? And of course they won't be, because as you said, this is very much the end of the trial. It is essentially, once the verdict has been handed down, as it were, it's at that point that you'll be able to see a visual record of it, which I think makes some sense. And I think that having some transparency, especially at the moment where people are, for want of a better word, crazy, and talk about increasing sentences and making people spend a lot more time in jail, I feel like there's a transparency aspect here that could be quite helpful, because ultimately the purpose of sort of prison and handing sentences to convicts is supposed to be about rehabilitation rather than punishment. I mean, of course, there is a need for people to be punished for things they've done wrong, but ultimately what I think we want out of a court and the prison system is for someone to come out of it at the other end having been rehabilitated, and then to have some sort of life after that, a life that is hopefully not a return to crime. So I feel like perhaps we might be able to get the public to see a little bit more of what the courts do, and that might be a generally positive thing, because I suspect that a lot of people, and I would not exclude myself from this, actually probably don't have a big idea about what happens in court and the enormous value that judges offer and what they're trying to achieve when they sentence people.
Well, if you have any thoughts on this or knowledge of courtroom procedure, then do of course let us know. I welcome all views at hello@uktechshow.com, albeit ones that stay within the confines of the law.
You're used to hearing the smooth, velvet sound of Nate's voice drizzled over your ears like a warm eardrum syrup, topped off with the freshly squeezed citrus tang of an Ian Morris opinion. Supporters of the show at patreon.com/UK Tech enjoy second helpings every week. So pull up a chair, find your nearest spoon, and tuck into a sumptuous extra helping with no commitment. If you have any allergies, please inform a waiter.
It's time to hear from our good friend, Mr. Tom Merritt, Daily Tech News Show, who's let us know what we've been missing in the wider world of tech over the last week. Tom, what's been going on?
If you didn't listen to Daily Tech News Show this week, you missed why maybe Twitter should not give you an edit button, reasons why Quibi is a good idea, how to keep a liver alive on its own for a week, the looming app risks to the U.S. presidential race in Iowa, and tiny robots made from frog stem cells. You missed a lot more, too, at DailyTechNewsShow.com.
Tom Merritt there, DailyTechNewsShow.com, indeed the place to go. We spent quite a long time over the last couple of episodes talking about CES. We had one extra show go out, funnily enough, on Extra Message, in which Ian and I spent a good 20, 25 minutes talking about our experiences of covering tech shows like CES over the last decade or more. If you are interested in just what it's like to cover those shows and how it's evolved, that is out now exclusively for patrons over on patreon.com/UK Tech. You can get that and all back episodes of Extra Message if you become a patron of ours. And thank you to everyone who is. Thank you also, Mr. Morris. I know you have lots of life to enjoy living this afternoon, so I'm going to let you go while I edit three versions of our own podcast here. But thank you for being here, my friend.
Well, thank you for making the sacrifice of Sunday and grafting away at a computer. I think our listeners and certainly I feel very grateful that you do make that effort. It is a wonderful thing.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.